Well, here we go for a Friday as we get you set for the weekend. It's McCowan, it's Shannon on the program, and Hockey Pucks are joining us today. I suspect we're midway through the Stanley Cup final.
You think it's over in four?
Well, I called Tampa in five.
Yes, you did.
I'm not sure it's going to go that long. Yeah. And I'm quite certain that no one else will agree with me, but the things that I suspected would happen in this series have happened.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a rough road for the Montreal Canadiens from here in.
Yeah. Interesting thing. Game three, the Friday night game, is obviously the most important. That's my Captain Obvious moment for the day. But I'll tell you what, it will be painful. If Tampa wins tonight, there's 2 days off, Bob, before game four. It will feel like forever before the game four on Monday. If Montreal does not win game three, that to me is where this is it tonight. To me, this is the series. If Montreal is,
I think Montreal has to win the next two. Anything less than that, and this thing is going to end.
And my only argument is that they were down 3-1 once already in these playoffs and still won.
But that was against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That was your Maple Leafs, yeah.
Not my Maple Leafs, Maple Leafs.
No, your Maple Leafs.
And they're the ones that bring the ammunition to shoot themselves in the head.
No, they bring a knife to a gunfight. That's what
this Tampa team is a completely different animal.
As I said, I admit I picked Montreal to win. And hey, listen, we've had Cooper on. John Cooper is one of the great people of our game, and has coached a really good team. I just think there's always the belief that Tampa's good, but can they be this good? And every time they get their backs against the wall, they prove to us that yes, they are. They are this good. They are deep. Their goalie is good. Their defense is big and fast and mobile. You know, you almost want to sit there and say, and I admit this, I almost wanted to call the bluff that they can't be this good. And they are.
They are. Yeah. And they're good in the places where you need to be good when you get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and especially the Stanley Cup final. Goaltending in the blue line. They're as good as they're better than everybody. And I think that was something that was overlooked by a lot of folks. But that being said, we'll see what our guests have to say today. Jim Hewson will join us, who needs no introduction, from Hockey Night in Canada. And Joe Micheletti is doing color for the radio, for the NHL final. And they will join us when we come back after these messages. Well, the Stanley Cup final is two games done, and maybe halfway done, depending on your viewpoint at this point. Jim Hewson joins us along with Joe Micheletti, who is doing the NHL final, is in Montreal now. Well, I don't know how many predicted it would be 2-0 Tampa. I'm not particularly surprised. Huey, are you?
No, not really. And I'll preface this by saying that having counted Montreal out in three series already, I really truly believed in them by the time the final started in the first game, because I thought, this is not an accident. You know, I'm finally convinced they're a really good team. But then I look at the other side, and not only are the Lightning the defending Stanley Cup champions, but they have an incredible wealth of experience. Most of these guys have been together since about 2014. They're all in that neighborhood of 80 to 100 playoff games. They've won a championship, so none of us should be surprised that they're actually up 2-0.
Joe, do we overrate the significance of experience, especially in the playoffs?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at Montreal, Bob, and the thing that's been so impressive to me is that when they acquired players that had won a Stanley Cup, it almost, maybe not immediately, but over the course of time, and certainly when the playoffs started, it helped elevate those players that did not have the experience. To me, you get a player like Suzuki, who's 21, and yes, he's a very good player, but I think the addition of those players with the playoff experience have helped him and some of the other younger players, including Kotkaniemi and even Caulfield, elevate their games because there's a comfort level that these experienced players bring with them. And I kind of expected that first game that Montreal played. You know, one of the things we talked about in our pregame was, you know, how are all these young players that played so well for Montreal, especially Suzuki, who I thought maybe was the best player in that series against Vegas. Now, how are they going to do with this new experience of never having played in the Stanley Cup final? And I think to a certain extent, you kind of expected that. But then, you know, the bounce back that Suzuki in particular had in game two was kind of what we've seen. And so I think the experience helps these young players reach a new level.
You know, I think if there is one level of frustration for Montreal, it is that I think they probably believe they outplayed Tampa in game two and still lost. And that might be the most telling tale of what we've seen in the first two games, particularly that second period, where Montreal had opportunities. Tampa on their power play was absolutely anemic. And then there's Blake Coleman scoring with less than a second to play in the second period to take the lead and become the game-winning goal. The test for Montreal, in my opinion, and Jim, maybe you can jump on this, is how they react to playing so well and losing in game two.
Without question. But there, that goes back to the part we were talking about experience. That's so, we've seen that over the years, a team like Tampa with a wealth of experience, not playing a particularly great game by their standards in particular, being outplayed by Montreal, but they didn't just fly apart. They didn't come unhinged and open the game up and think, oh boy, we better get going here and try and, you know, get some goals. They just kind of hung with it, took the punches that they were taking, and you don't have to apologize for having the best goaltender on the planet. And Vasilevsky was the best goaltender in that game and looked like the best goaltender on the planet at times during that game. So that's a mark again of the experience. When you've played 100 playoff games, you learn to weather a storm and you become opportunist. And that's exactly what Tampa was. And it will sting for Montreal. And I'll be really interested to see how they react to it.
John mentioned the power play, Joe. Tampa's power play looked like they had it on a string, looked, you know, untouchable in game one, less so in game two. Is there a reason why power plays come and go? I mean, there's no doubt that Tampa has the skill set to make that power play devastating. But like every other team, days come when it doesn't work, and then other days where everything fits into place. Do you have an analysis of this?
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, you know, Montreal finally gave up a power play goal in game one. Mm-hmm. And as we see throughout the history of playoffs, that when teams, and even this year in the regular season, because teams played back to back and sometimes teams played other teams four straight games. And so there was that little bit of a playoff scenario. And you hear coaches say, you know, it's like the playoffs. And so every game is another adjustment. And I think you give credit to Montreal for the adjustment that they made. They got back to the penalty killing that we had seen prior to this series, where Montreal, their aggressiveness up the ice, the pressure that they put on, and the way they read the plays in their own zone, the difficulty that they put other teams through in gaining their zone. And then when all that breaks down, your goaltending, and Carey Price, you know, is obviously, you know, had a fabulous playoff run. So I think that Montreal made an adjustment. And if you think about how bad the Tampa Bay power play looked, I think it was because of the way Montreal played. They didn't give Kucherov as much time. They didn't give Point as much time. They got to the points a little bit quicker. So the times when Tampa Bay had a chance to then set it up and back off Montreal is when they were at their best, but it didn't happen enough.
Hey, Joe, just to follow up on that too, one of the things we always watch for on really good penalty kills is blocked shots and good sticks. And so even when Tampa in the second game didn't get anything out of their power play, they still got their setup and they still got that puck over to Kucherov. And how many times did he not get it through to the net or was wide just because there was pressure there and good sticks?
Hey, do you?
I was just going to say, just a follow up to Huey. You know, again, that's kind of part of what their mantra is. Yeah. Do anything it takes to win, including the blocked shots and the good sticks, which you have to have on the penalty kill. Sorry, Bob.
No, not at all. Joe, do you think Montreal can play from behind?
I don't think they're nearly as good from behind. I mean, you know, that takes a little bit of step back. But when you see them get a lead, which has been really their team focus, and when you say, well, what's their strategy? You know, for Montreal, it's get the lead and then not necessarily back off, but play a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we've seen throughout these playoffs, they come out in the first period, and if they can get a lead, they look like a different team. So can they play from behind? I think game two tells you that they can, because of, you know, they just had at least half their team on an individual basis was better in game two than they were in game one, and probably more than that. I mean, the fourth line, which was terrible in game number one, suddenly looked like they did in some of the other games. So that helped them get to the net. The Suzuki line that we talked about earlier was so much better. Their centers as a group, that their centers had one shot on goal in game number one, and Suzuki alone had nine in game two. So I think there were a lot of reasons to believe that that they can come from behind. But, you know, I'm like you guys, you know, Vasilevsky won the game.
The only reason I asked that, because Jim said that, you know, they didn't, they tried in the third period, they were down one and then they were down two. But can they afford to open the game up, Jim, against a team like Tampa? That isn't that in the end the crux of if Montreal is supposed to do anything if they don't have the lead?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, the answer to that question is no, they can't afford to open it up. They just don't play that way.
Right.
But Tampa learned that too. I mean, they don't open it up. So they've learned over the years that you're not going to win too many 6-3 hockey games in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we've seen them win 1-0. We've seen them win 2-1. Montreal needs everybody going. They almost need the perfect storm to beat Tampa. And one of the big differences for me that I've seen as the playoffs have gone on, and in this series in particular, is Tampa is now deeper than they've ever been, especially if they can get Killorn back in the lineup, because of the line of Yanni Gourde, Barkley Goodrow, and Blake Coleman, that I don't think was at their best through the first part of the playoffs, but now they look really good. And that's really difficult. That makes things really difficult for Montreal, just because the match game is so difficult when you have to play against, you've got to come up against three different lines and they're all really good. And the fourth line isn't bad either, but I think it makes a bit of a difference, and it should make a bit of a difference for Montreal on home ice to be able to get a little better matchup. And but Tampa's such a hard team to match against because they're so deep. And I don't think Montreal can afford to open it up at all. We've seen what's happened to Montreal when they turn the puck over. Tampa puts it in the net very quickly.
And we know Killorn's not playing. We know Killorn's not playing in game three.
You know, the other thing, guys, is that when I think of teams that have to open up the game because they're behind, to me, you have to have a group of defense, or at least a few back there, that can get involved in the offense. Montreal's a team that they're not a high scoring defensive group. You know, I mean, they don't have those offensive players, even though Petrie, you know, had a good season for them offensively. He's still not the type of player that you would say join the rush, lead the rush, make an individual play that helps get you back in there and open things up from defense. Whereas, to me, Tampa Bay is a better team if they have to do that. Mm-hmm. But so for me, Montreal to open things up, I don't know if that does anything for me, because they really don't have a group of defense back there that you would have to say, boy, watch them joining the rush because they're so talented offensively on the back end. They're not that type of team to me.
We're with Jim Houston, Joe Micheletti. In the probably hundreds of playoff series that the four of us have watched over the years, almost invariably we talk about this and it comes to pass that goaltending wins and loses most series. And it may wind up being this way again. But at the beginning of it, I think we thought we were seeing probably the two best goaltenders in the NHL, at least the two best goaltenders right now in the NHL. But so far, Huey, this has been a one-way street. This has been Vasilevsky being great and Carey Price all of a sudden being, well, ordinary.
Human.
And I don't know how to term it because he really hasn't given up a bad goal, has he?
I don't think so. I mean, you can quibble over a couple of, you know, maybe the first goal that was scored in game number two. Yeah, but I give him a pass because he's so good at it. The problem he had was that a couple of the errors that were made in front of him made it almost impossible for him to make a save. I think of Joel Edmondson's reverse behind the net and the giveaway to Andre Palat. There's another mark of the experience of Tampa Bay. That's a guy who didn't pounce on the giveaway and shank it, put it off the glass. He knew exactly what he was going to do with it. He was calm and collected and banked it off Price and into the net. So I wouldn't say for a second that Carey has been bad at all. It's just that Vasilevsky is impenetrable, and the Canadians, because of the way they're structured and the way they play, Carey really doesn't have much room for error at all.
Well, how similar are the two styles between them? Carey Price seems to be the most fundamentally sound goaltender I think I've ever seen. He makes very few mistakes. Sometimes he doesn't get to the puck, but Vasilevsky a little bit more adventurous, perhaps, Joe?
Maybe athletic is...
That might be the better term.
The better word. Because I think he's sound. And I think the stat that we had or used, I believe 7 of the first 8 goals that were scored in the series were deflected.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Carey Price has been better than ordinary in this series. But I think the one thing that the three previous opponents of the Canadians weren't able to do as much as they needed to was get to the middle of the ice and grind and get there and try to get deflections and screens on Carey Price. Tampa Bay, certainly in the first game, I thought Tampa Bay was excellent. You know, first goal deflected in. The other, they just kept on, you know, finding a way to get there, which made things a little bit more difficult for Montreal, for Carey Price and the defense. So, you know, I think to me that was the biggest difference for Montreal, that they didn't have to face in their first three series, is Carey Price was able to see most of the shots and then had to make some spectacular saves either when he didn't or on the number or a few rebounds that he had to face. But Tampa Bay's been different as far as using that grit and determination and whatever you want to call it to get to him.
I'm not arguing any of those points, but here's the reality. Carey Price's save percentage is about .850. What we all know is that's usually not good enough to win too many hockey games. And Vasilevsky is about 100 points better. And that's usually plenty good enough to win a lot of hockey games.
I think that speaks more to I think that speaks more to team defense than it does to goaltending, though.
I don't disagree.
The numbers are bang on, Bob, but to me, this is where, when you think about, and we've talked a ton in 4 rounds of playoffs about, you know, Sherratt, Weber, Edmondson, and Petrie, but then we haven't really talked as near as much about Hedman, Sergachev, McDonough, who is, I don't know, is he the most underrated, really good defenseman in the National Hockey League? Perhaps. You know, Joe, you saw him play a ton with the Rangers. We've seen him a ton play in Tampa. Yeah. And Eric Chernak has become a star.
Through these
playoffs. So all of a sudden, as great the depth we think Montreal defense is, Tampa's better. Tampa is better.
Yeah, I don't think Montreal has as much depth as they need. I mean, those fifth and sixth guys are still only playing 10 or 11 minutes.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I keep I keep thinking, well, when are they going to get worn out? And I think back to the last time, I believe it was last time Chicago won the cup, and they won with four defense, right? They just played them, and they were getting banged, and they just kept, and they didn't have quite as much size as Montreal has, but they had more agility and more ability, I think, to move the puck. And with you look at them, I mean, their smallest defenseman is Ruda at 204 pounds. Yeah. Other than that, they're 215 and more, including a few that are over 230 and 240. So we talk about Montreal's size on defense and their ability to bang people and keep everybody out. So I'm with you, John. I mean, the defense for Tampa Bay is a better overall group.
And you're right about Ryan McDonagh. This is, we saw this in the bubble last year too. He just, he reminds me of Kevin Lowe. He just, like, when he goes into the corner, he's either coming out with a puck or a penalty. And it's, he just battles so hard and he blocks shots and he plays half the game. Then you add in Sergachev, who is a revelation to me, has just come along so well and did in the playoffs last year. And now he looks like a star, and he can get up the ice and he competes and battles, and Chernak is kind of the same way. Mm. And so they're so deep back there that there, again, it makes it really hard to match up, because even if you don't get the forward matchup you want, and they might not on the road in Montreal, they can always have really good defensemen on the ice against anybody, and they don't have to be fearful of getting their third pair stuck out on the ice.
We're with Jim Houston, Joe Micheletti. We'll take a quick break. Come back with more after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. Jim Houston is with us from the West Coast. Joe Micheletti is in Montreal and covers the NHL final, and we'll do so again in game three tonight. Intriguingly, there is never a shortage of opinion going into any playoff round in any sport, almost. Everybody in the media jumps on board. And somewhere you can find a list of people and who they think is going to win. And as often as not, those of us who do this on occasion are wrong. I still look back at before this series started, and the number of people that actually thought the Montreal Canadiens would win this series. And John Shannon is raising his hand. Hugh, you might have too, huh? And I'm honestly shocked by it. And I go back, if for nothing else, and listening to you guys talk about, we know Tampa has the best goaltender in the NHL right now. You guys were just talking about how great their defense is, and it is, and they have guys that can put the biscuit in the basket. How is it possible that people, for lack of a better term, underrated the Tampa Bay Lightning in this series by suggesting that Montreal could beat them? Joe?
You've had the wrong guest, Bob. Your problem. You got to get some smart people on.
Well, we try. We just can't find any.
Yeah.
But it's not just the people on this show. I mean, I've read online and elsewhere, you know, there were a significant number of people that sincerely and really felt the Montreal Canadiens would win this series, including my friend Shannon.
Maybe we believed in fate or hoped in fate.
Well, is that a reason to pick them?
You know, it's partly because of the way they won the games. And you look at the first three series, and they didn't win by accident. You know, that just doesn't happen.
You
get through three rounds. So that's why people became believers in them, because of the way they play a team game and could shut down good offensive teams.
But this was the 16th best team by record. 18th best.
Yeah.
Going into the playoffs. Well, the 16th going into the playoffs. And
well, I,
and so go ahead, Joe.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, Bob, I think what Montreal did is they made a lot of believers out of people that thought that they would struggle to make the playoffs, and especially with the way they finished. And I remember working game four of Montreal, Toronto. And when the game ended, I said to my broadcast partner, I said, Montreal's toast. They had no life. They had no scoring chances. You know, there was nothing there. And
agreed.
And then I heard Carey Price in the post game, and he was cool and he was calm, And he would say, I don't worry about the scoring on this team. I go against these players. So I think he did something and helped that team in a certain way. And once they got a little spark, which he obviously needed to be great in game five, and got a little spark, and then things started to turn. I still think that they're probably a little bit too young and not as good as Tampa. But you know what? They showed in game two that they could have won that game. They were the much better team throughout. But as Huey said, you know, you got to count your goaltender as part of your team. And it was a clear win. I think that Montreal still thinks they can win. And when you hear Carey Price said, it's just belief. That's what it is. It's belief. And so they think they're going to win tonight. I wouldn't doubt it. I still think we're going back to Tampa. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I still think in the end, Tampa wins, but there's something that Montreal's got going that's made a made believers out of a lot of people, including John Shannon.
Well, I'm not sure Shannon's ready to give up the ghost on Montreal winning.
No, here's it, you and Joe, just to look back, when you say they found a spark, and the spark was their penalty kill. That was their spark. The fact that they knew that at one point they had scored more shorthanded goals than they had allowed power play goals. I mean, if that's not a confidence builder above and beyond what Carey Price was doing for them, I don't know what would be.
History tells us that you can live in the playoffs when your power play sputters, but you cannot live in the playoffs if your penalty killing isn't great. And Montreal they've been fantastic throughout the playoffs. I think for me now, it's fascinating to watch game three because Montreal will be at home. The match game changes. They can get to the last change and they will throw everything that they possibly can. They will throw their best game at Tampa. And again, I look back on experienced teams. This will be a real test for Tampa. And if they hang around early in the game and don't let themselves get out of their game and get behind, they'll be fine. And that's where an experienced team knows exactly what's coming and they should be ready for the storm that should be the Montreal Canadiens in game three.
Joe, the match game includes the having their head coach back, yeah. Montreal. How much difference having Ducharme do the matching versus what Luke was trying to do in the two games in Tampa? How much difference will that make?
Well, I think the one hard match will obviously be Danault against Point. Even though Point and Kucherov didn't contribute offensively in game number two, and certainly Suzuki was better. I think where it helps getting Ducharme back, and they had such communication as to what they wanted for matchups. But I think with Luke Richardson going back on the other side on the defense, you know, with his group of defensemen, that might be, you know, even more of a positive, I think, for Montreal. I still have some doubts about whether those four can play that many minutes and you're not going to be able to, you know, bring in the other two. So I think with Luke Richardson back there, that might change a little bit.
There's a couple of points here, one on either side that I want to get into a little bit. I don't know how all of us categorize a dynasty in any sport, but is it safe to say if you win three straight Stanley Cups, you know, that puts you in a very unique category historically? Does it make you a dynasty, Huey?
I don't know. We throw that word around for teams.
I know.
All the time. And I just know that whatever happens here, Tampa Bay is one of the best teams I've ever seen play the game. Yeah. Well, they're really, really good, and they have been since about 2014-15 when the core of the group came together. They've grown together. They play together all the time. And, you know, I think was Chicago a dynasty? They didn't win consecutively, but they won three.
Won three out of five, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's dynastic to me. So I don't know if nobody in our era has and probably ever will match the Islanders winning four straight or what the Canadians did in the 70s. I just don't think the league allows that anymore because there are so many good teams. But so if you, I don't like to use the word dynasty, but for a 10-year period, Tampa is as good a team as we've seen in the league.
I think they, you know, I do think When you talk about what Tampa has done, and I think the definition of dynasty has changed because, particularly in this sport, when you consider what cap management and player contracts and collective bargaining has allowed you to do or not to do. I mean, I think Chicago was a dynasty in the post-cap era for the amount of impact that they had truly for a decade in the game. Tampa wins. If Tampa wins this year, I think they're on the verge of it. I don't think they're there yet. I think they have to win another one. It doesn't have to necessarily be three consecutive for me, though, to be a dynasty anymore.
No, and I think that's my point. I mean, and a perfect example in another sport is the New England Patriots, who, to the best of my recollection, did not win three in a row. But no one would question who the best team in the NFL was over the last 10 years, would we?
10? I mean, how about 15?
Yeah. Well, okay.
Right.
That's a dynasty.
Yeah, and I agree with Huey. I mean, this Tampa Bay team has been good for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, are they going to have another $9 or $10 million player that's going to have a surgery and keep them out next season so that they can keep this team together? I mean, it's under the rules. I mean, they didn't break any rules, but the problem is that, they ended up winning when they changed they didn't change the core, mm-hmm. but they changed some of the pieces.
Yes,
that's what it took for them to win. And so now you've got some of those pieces that are going to be unrestricted free agents on a team that's really trying to keep it all together with the cap. And so can those pieces that they're probably going to lose with Coleman or Goodrow or maybe some of the defense, are they going to be able to replace that to keep that element of this team, which they have been proven that they needed to win, together?
And they're going to lose another body, a valuable body in the expansion draft.
Sure.
Just one, right. But they're going to lose one.
Right.
And more. In fact, I would argue that the expansion draft will affect Tampa almost more than any other team because they're so deep.
Probably right. And to your point about dynasties, Bob, it's darn near impossible to do what we would consider to be what one of the greatest feats. I mentioned the Islanders winning four in a row in a cap system, and especially now with a pandemic affected cap system.
Yeah.
That is flat, it's really going to be hard for these guys to win again unless they can find, they're going to lose a couple of pieces, the important pieces that Joe talked about, unless they can find them somewhere again. And that's the real test for Julian Breezeball, the general manager, isn't it? Because he knows he's going to lose a player to expansion. He knows that he's going to lose a couple to free agency, but he's still going to have this dynamic core together, and he's going to have to find some pieces to fit in where some have had to drop off, because there's a couple of guys that are going to take off and get some big money elsewhere. And that's such a different thing to deal with in the National Hockey League now than it was 20 years ago when one team could win for years and years and years.
Well, you raise an interesting point there, Huey. Let me get your reaction to this. Tampa Bay wins this year. Obviously we're getting ahead of ourselves, but if they do win this year, it's two consecutive Stanley Cups, but both of them during pandemic-affected seasons. Will there be an asterisk at some point in time besides either of these two victories?
Certainly shouldn't be, not in my estimation. I watched every game they played in the bubbles of Toronto and Edmonton last year, and I thought it was a real credit to the players, given the circumstances that they had to play under, the lives that they had to live, that was a completely legitimate Stanley Cup championship. I mean, watch the bodies that fell and how mm-hmm. Dallas disintegrated physically,
Colorado,
just because of the way the games were played. So that, it was full on great playoff hockey. It was just weird because there was nobody in any of the buildings. And this year is a little bit similar, and it will seem a little more similar to last year while they play in Montreal because there aren't as many people. But it's great to see that the fans have returned in America and it looks pretty normal. But I don't think there's any asterisk beside anything that they've done in the past couple of years. We'll all have an asterisk in our lives and beside everything that's happened in the last 16, 18 months, simply because our world has been completely different. But they've carried on and been terrific.
Joe, agree, disagree?
I think asterisks get applied to teams that no one expects to win. And I think if you took a vote over the last 8-10 years, Tampa Bay is always a team that I think most people say have a real legitimate shot of winning the Stanley Cup. Now, if you take, I think if Montreal won this, I think there would be people that would attach an asterisk to that because they say, well, nobody expected them to win. In fact, there was a good chance they wouldn't have made the playoffs. And yet they got in because of this new, this new system playing in the North Division. And we're able to win it that way. I think some people would attach an asterisk to that, to them, I should say, but not to Tampa Bay.
Here's the other thing is, before the bubble, you guys remember this, and the players deserve credit for this. You know, there was a push, particularly from the league side, to make the first round of the playoffs a best of five. And the players went back and said, no. We cannot compromise the integrity of the tournament. We have to have four rounds of the best of seven. And because in our lifetime, we've had 248-game seasons, and the playoffs have been normal, 4 7-round series, and there's no asterisk for the Chicago Blackhawks in 2013. There's no asterisk there. There should be no asterisk for either team, because the playoffs, when you look at the Guiden record book 15 years from now, you're going to be able to say that Montreal won their first round series in 7, their second round series in 4, their third round series in 6, and whatever number, if they still do win. And Tampa, you can go through the same thing. The tournament, the Stanley Cup tournament, has not been compromised. Therefore, there should be no asterisk.
Yeah, I think it, and I'm referring to asterisk people, which I am not one. But there are those that want to find a reason why somebody shouldn't have won it. And I'm with you. If Montreal comes back to win this thing, I'm not putting an asterisk next to them. It's a great story. Mm-hmm. But there will be those that are out there that are those types of people that will apply.
Last thing from me, and this, I will be accused of being premature in asking this question, but Lord knows when we get the next opportunity to chat with you guys. So when all is said and done, regardless of how this thing unfolds, as of today, are the Montreal Canadiens the real thing? Or is this one of those fluky scenarios that pops up every now and again in sports, and they will not be a contender next year? Hugh, you want to take it?
I think we just, I think a couple of our guys, just John and Joe, just answered that question to a certain extent. You don't get to the Stanley Cup final by accident. They didn't come tripping along and accidentally get to the Stanley Cup final. And I mean, I'm one who thought they were going out early. I didn't think they could handle Toronto. But in Toronto kind of imploded, didn't they? But as I've watched them go along, what has made me think that they had a chance and have a chance in the Stanley Cup final is the legitimacy with which they play, the way they played a team game, the way some of their young players, Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, Caulfield, rose to the occasion at the most difficult time of the year and together beat really good teams. So it remains to be seen what they will be like in the years to come. But I think that all of the moves that they made were to get to where they are right now. And the problem is, for some of those guys, like some of the people who have been real great contributors for them, the contribution hasn't been so much in putting pucks in the net. But for guys like Eric Staal and for Corey Perry, the contribution that they have made is their experience and their older guys. So I'm not sure that whether they'll be back or you can replace that. There's the difficulty in moving forward, but you hope that they've passed along what they know to the young guys, and Nick Suzuki can take off and pick up where the older guys have left off. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. I think they have a chance to benefit from the experience and be just as good.
What do you expect from them, Joe, next year?
You know, I think of I go back to a conversation that I had with, you know, and Daryl Sutter, I'm sure, has told other people, it wasn't just me, but in talking to him during those years in Los Angeles and winning, and you know, talking about some of those young players that he had on those teams, and Tyler Toffoli was one of them, about, and well, the way he put it was, you cannot put a price on the experience that these players go through to get to this level. And I remember as a player, and I didn't play all that many playoff games, but I played some. But when you step on the ice for the first Stanley Cup playoff game in your career, it's different. You feel different. Your mind thinks differently. It's like, you know, listen to Nick Faldo when he talks about getting to a Sunday. You know, when you get to a Sunday and you're on the leaderboard or you're leading a tournament, you've never been there before, it's a different, your hands feel different, everything feels different. And that's true for these players as well. So I think the criticism of the Canadians in the last number of years was, well, we got these guys, they've been around, they, you know, there's no youth, who's coming up, we need a centerman. Well, I think now that you have Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, Caulfield, that are going through this experience right now, this is going to make them, they're going to be so much better as players. And their understanding of what it takes to win is something that you don't get unless you go through it. And so I this is going to be a huge boost for Montreal, with especially with these young players, into the future because of where they are right now.
And there are Canadians fans right now saying, you're right, Joe, but that's why they need to play Romanov.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I liked Romanov when he got in the lineup.
Oh, play, so did I.
I was surprised. I thought they should have put him back in.
Yeah.
But anyway,
how much more time do we have?
here's the other thing
to remember. If the schedule that they put out at the end of July comes to fruition, and we're all hoping it does, Montreal is going to be playing against Tampa in their division, Florida in their division, Boston in their division, Toronto in their division, and I am now officially putting Ottawa on that list because I think Ottawa is really a good young team if they can fix a couple of things and maybe get a free agent or two. All of a sudden, Montreal could be a better team next year and might not make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of that,
that's true.
Old division system.
Well, and Dallas was in the Stanley Cup final a year ago, and how'd they do this year?
That's right.
So all kinds of funny things can happen over time.
It is the nature of the league now. And there again, to your point about dynasties, that's why it's so hard to be a dynasty, because there were days in the National Hockey League where you could trample over teams and there were guaranteed win nights. There aren't any now.
But I think the other thing is, for a fan base, instead of going into a season on a negative note with thinking we have no chance, the Montreal fan base, I think, is going to go in with hope because of what they've seen. And I might be totally wrong.
Oh, I don't think you're wrong at all. I think Montreal fans have hope regardless. They'll have extraordinary hope now. If you watched any of the celebration after the third round in on the streets of Montreal, you know how they feel about it.
They better not get off to a bad start then.
guys, we thank you as always for taking time for us. We appreciate it. Stay safe. Be well. Stay cool there, Huey, okay?
Doing our best. Good to talk to you all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. So our thanks to Houston and Micheletti, of course, for joining us on the program. You mentioned something off the top, and we didn't really get to it during our conversation between the four of us, but John Cooper, who was on with us and is such a laid back, good guy, but might be the most underrated coach, not just in hockey, but in all of sports. And yet I say that believing that I don't really know how to quantify or qualify the significance of a coach. All I know is this guy's got good players.
Yeah.
But he knows how to deal with them.
He does. That truly is his strength. Interesting. You know, we had Rod Brind'Amour on earlier this year too, Bob. Brind'Amour won Coach of the Year. Cooper's team beat him. Cooper's team is probably going to win the Stanley Cup now, and Cooper's not the Coach of the Year.
No, but you know, the coach of the year voting in all sports is, it goes that way.
And that's not a knock at Rod.
It's about overachieving based on anticipation, right?
But John, you know, John is affable. He's, you know, I'm sure he's hard-nosed when it comes to his players. And they went, I tell you what, they went through cycles in the time that John took over. Gosh, his first game was in Winnipeg way back, I think, in 2013, after Steve Yzerman fired Guy Boucher and hired John Cooper. John Cooper went through his battles with these players. He and Steven Stamkos did not get along for a long time.
There was some talk about him being fired several years ago.
Well, when Steve was manager, there were times that Yzerman thought they were better than their final result in the regular season occurred. I mean, they went to the Stanley Cup final. I remember being there in the Stanley Cup final in 2015 against the Blackhawks, and Cooper did everything right. His team just wasn't ready to win the championship yet. But then there were some down years, and there were some disappointing years. And remember, I mean, the last playoff series Tampa has lost was against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and they got swept in four games.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of challenge. What's wrong with this team? What's going to happen with this team?
Yep.
Cooper has been able to galvanize him, his players, the organization. They've done a magnificent job in that period of time. He does deserve a lot of credit. And if anybody that's listening to the podcast, if you want to go back and listen to Cooper, he is an engaging guy to sit and talk to, isn't he, Bob?
Oh, most definitely. It's the first opportunity I had to talk to him on a one-on-one basis. And I'm sold.
Yeah.
He's got my vote.
By the way, your belief that we're halfway through the Stanley Cup final. By the way, there's two things. This is the first playoff game Canadians have played in 95 years that isn't at the Forum. That tells you how long they've gone between
games.
First time in 95 years the game isn't at the Forum. The other thing is, only once in Canadians' history has the visiting team skated around the ice in Montreal with a Stanley Cup. Only once before. So that's one of those great Montreal traditions. Only once, and that was in 1989 when the Calgary Flames did it. But all those years and all the dynasties and that, you know, the aura of the Bleu Blanc et Rouge and the Flying Frenchman, they were never... They did lose some Stanley Cups, but they didn't lose very many at home, just once.
Well, when it's two donut, you better win game three. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Montreal Canadiens are. And we'll see how that turns out. Thank you, John. Have yourself a swell weekend.
Yes, sir.
And thank you all for watching or listening. We'll catch you on Monday. Goodbye, everybody.